Blog Talk Radio.
Ron Edwards, hosting the Ron and Don program, coming to you from the very, very cold upper Midwest of the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. Temperature hasn't been above zero for the last, going into 13 days, if you will. And wow, we feel like we're up in the Northwest Territory, way up there in Canada, if you will. But again, I'm Ron Edwards. My associate, Mr. Allen, who has just returned from a holiday trip, will not be with us this evening. Hopefully, you'll be able to return next Wednesday. We look forward to that. But we have a rather in-depth program for you tonight. A lot of things going on well across the world, in the nation, and certainly here in our Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. And also, let us take this occasion to wish you a Happy New Year. As we move into the year 2018, things have already started. Donald Trump woke up this morning deciding that he wanted to take on the world. That you would normally say that that's self-explanatory, but, you know, really, really not. Kind of makes you wonder if there's a problem with, you know, mental balance, etc. But he's the country's president. They elected him, you know, they wanted him, but it appeared that it was Vladimir Putin that made sure that he became the president of the United States, if you will. Well, some congratulations in order. Our sister city of St. Paul, across the river, if you will, a very frozen river, to say the least. First time in its history. St. Paul founded in 1854, elected in November its first African-American mayor, a native son of the city of St. Paul, third generation, if you will, Melvin Carter III. Congratulations to him. Congratulations to his family, his supporters, loved ones, and et cetera. And you can do nothing but wish him the very best. He was sworn in officially yesterday in an official inauguration swearing in. There will be a mayoral ball this coming Friday in the city of St. Paul. Minneapolis, too, has sworn in a private ceremony. I'm not quite sure what that was really all about. There will be a more public ceremony on Monday here in the city of Minneapolis. Jacob Fry, former city council member, one term, four years, defeated the one-term incumbent, Betsy Hodges, the second female to be elected mayor of the city of Minneapolis, following on the heels of the history-making and very beloved Sharon Sells Belton almost 20 years ago. Mayor Belton served two terms, should have probably served three or four, but there was some treachery, if you will, in the politics, and support was thrown to a individual by the name of R.T. Ryback, who served three terms and may have very well bankrupt the city. He is now at the Minneapolis Foundation, where I assume he's still working on his plan to change the configuration and leadership of the African-American community. That's actually really been done. But back to St. Paul again, congratulations to Melvin Carter III, if you will, sitting his cabinet and everything in place. The seven-member St. Paul City Council will be in session in a couple of days. They will be announcing their leadership, if you will. So, again, we watch closely. We have a feeling tonight, and again, we are sorry we're not going to be able to have our phone lines open, but we will not be doing that until the return of my co-host, Mr. Donald Allen, if you will. But it also gives us the opportunity to talk uninterrupted with regards to what the situation is going to look like here in Minneapolis. A couple of University of Minnesota and St. Thomas professors have indicated that they think that this will be a very difficult time of governance in the city of Minneapolis, that the city council does not have the kind of structure or features, if you will, that will allow for a smooth transition that was in place under former Council President Barb Johnson, who served over almost a decade and a half. And we were certainly saddened to see Barb Johnson defeated, if you will. We, contrary to what a lot of people say, we think that she did a good job. She certainly kept things in line as it pertains to the appointment of the first black chief in the city, police chief in the city of Minneapolis. We've already had a black fire chief, Alex Jackson, the beloved Alex Jackson, a couple of years ago, served for 4 years, did a tremendous job of keeping this department together and to keep the ethnic balance that is so important to the so-called image of liberal cities. By the way, there is a scenario which is kind of interesting. St. Paul, which elected its first black mayor in November, as previous to that, had three black chiefs over a period of almost 30 years. Whereas in Minneapolis, we had a black mayor, but we had never had a black chief of police until Mateo Arredondo was selected and appointed to that position by the former mayor, Betsy Hodges. We have to remind our listening audience that that was not as clean a operation, if you will, that everyone likes to pretend. If it had not been for the leadership of Barb Johnson, I'm not sure that we would have had the kind of tranquility that we were allowed to have in the city and the political machinery in that council. Then Council President Johnson did an excellent job of keeping things together, because there were, at least as we have reported before, at least four council members who are still sitting council members who really were not that enthusiastic. In fact, for those of you that are immediately saying, what is, you know, this man trying to do, and et cetera, we refer you to the newspapers of that particular period of time where a number of unidentified or anonymous council members were talking in terms that we need to, quote, they need to wait, we need to conduct a search, and et cetera. There were a couple of council members led by Cam Gordon who were taking that kind of position. In fact, I always remember Cam Gordon as the man who reneged when it came time to bring a new chief in after a very miserable couple of years under Chief Tim Dolan. It was Cam Gordon that misrepresented his intentions and voted to return Tim Dolan to his position as chief of the Minneapolis Police Department. Same Tim Dolan who was sued by five African-American police officers, including the current chief of the department, Mateo Arredondo, for aiding, abetting, and furthering racism and bias and et cetera in a department that was being torn apart. And one of the people that worked closely with the black police officers to stop that was the former head of the Police Federation, John DeMonaco. In fact, DeMonaco put his tenure I think DeMonico was chief for, what, 11 years, 12 years of the Federation. But it cost him when he stood tall with the African Americans, and particularly the Mill City Five. Those were five African American officers who brought suit against the Minneapolis Police Department, against R.T. Ryback, against Mayor R.T. Ryback, and against Chief Tim Dolden. People don't like the crucial now as we move into a new regime. Jacob Fry, four-year council member from the Third Ward, Democrat, if you will, of Minneapolis, as we said earlier, was quietly sworn in as mayor of the city of Minneapolis yesterday. There will be a more formal, as we said earlier, a more formal procedure on Monday. Now, the reason that much of this becomes important is because we have watched closely as a longtime observer, if you will, as a former city official, as chairman of the city civil rights commission and all those kinds of things, head of the Urban League, chairman of its board, etc., member of the NAACP, all those kinds of things, and of course the overseer for the federal court of the Minneapolis Fire Department for 12 years, actually bringing everything into line and integrating that department in 1980. And we've noticed, and this is for, you know, those of you in the listening audience, and like I said, anytime, it's too bad we don't have the phone lines open tonight, but if we have them open next week upon the return of Mr. Allen, phone lines will be open, because by that time, a battle royal will have taken place. And I had wondered over the last almost 2 months why everyone had been so quiet with regards to the selection of leadership of the Minneapolis City Council. I mean, we know who the leader of the executive branch is going to be. It's going to be Jacob Fry, okay? But this is the charter that governs this city is a charter which is referred to as strong council, weak mayor. In other words, the legislative piece is extremely strong with regards to the running of the city, and the executive branch is fairly weak, if you will. And we did find it puzzling over the last 40 days, 45 days, that there's been so little discussion. Now, on these radio programs, right after the election in November of last year, 2017, we indicated that probably the first or second week in December, certainly before Christmas, there would be a organization meeting of the city council, both the returning members as well as the, five new members voted in. And we noticed with great interest that there seemed to be a dark side, if you will, with regards to what was going on. We are now much more aware of what will happen, but we are sworn to confidentiality. And on this one, we have no problem whatsoever carrying out that confidentiality and watching what will possibly be a battle royal for who will be the new president of the Minneapolis City Council. It will dictate a lot of things. First and foremost, the ability to govern, if you will, what we can expect, and a council that may very well be split 7-6 on many matters, if you will. The new mayor has indicated that he has three top priorities, which is interesting. Number one is housing. We have a lot of folks who are getting ready to become housing developers, particularly in and around North Minneapolis. We've been this road before in the African-American community. A lot of money is put into the community, never to be seen again, and the housing is not there, if you will. In fact, we will remind those of you that are a part of tonight's listening audience, of what happened when Richard Copeland allowed a significant parcel, a very large parcel of land, which was to have contained significant low-income housing and et cetera, was not carried through on. And Mr. Copeland, who relocated to Las Vegas, Nevada, later to be joined by his wife, who never could explain what happened to $3 million in monies for the African American Museum, which never came to fruition, if you will. But in the case of the housing, there had been a lot of maneuvering and manipulation. There's been some house purchases and et cetera, but only small in number. In other words, two or three facilities. But there had been some action taking place with the member of the city council who is no longer there. Some rumors were that the federal authorities, the Department of Justice, was taking a look, as well as housing and HUD, if you will, urban development, was taking a look at some of the patterns of financing, loans, and et cetera. But we assume that the Jeff Sessions Department of Justice will get to that when they decide to do that. So it was interesting to hear the new incoming mayor saying that housing will be a significant priority, and so that people of low income and particularly people of color will have an opportunity to, quote unquote, find decent housing, if you will. Obviously, the mayor has a number in mind. I'm talking about a financial number, if you will. The mayor and some members of the city council clearly have developers in mind. And so we posed the question tonight, you know, just a couple days into 2018, if there will be any persons of color. Notice we said persons of color, because Native American community and other communities certainly deserve the right to enjoy the fruits of what will be this significant plan dealing with new developments and et cetera throughout the city of Minneapolis. And so we look forward, as a historian, if you will, as a journalist, if you will, to see if all of that takes place, how it takes place, when it takes place, if you will. The second issue that the mayor, the newly sworn in mayor, police community relations. Now, Mayor Carter in St. Paul said exactly the same thing yesterday in the event that he was involved with that was put on as it pertains to his swearing in at Central High School, where he was a graduate and a tremendous athlete, particularly a tremendous track and field man, if you will. So both cities will be talking about looking at police-community relations, dealing with the problems on the street. Now, by the way, we've already had, unfortunately, our first homicide of 2018. We just had that on the early morning hours of the 1st of January, if you will. There seemed to be some vagueness on what was the manner of death of the 18-year-old individual found laying comatose on a street there along the 3100 block on Emerson Avenue North in Minneapolis, which is, of course, a very volatile area, has been for quite some time. But we have a couple of new council members that have come in who will be representing the north side, who said that they have the solution to how to deal with the problem of violence and gun violence and other kind of mayhem and trauma and et cetera. And so we certainly look forward to that. Now, the city council will have to immediately, in the next 4 to 5 calendar days, if you will, select its leaders. And they will start with the council president and then the council vice president, if you will. And then the council president will make the determination of who will chair and who will be members of a significant number of committees. This comes at a time when the City Council, back on the 8th of December, if I'm not mistaken, passed a resolution and a motion. This was a couple weeks before they gave themselves a $10,000 raise per council member. But they indicated the creation of a special department with a city coordinator working in that position, dealing with equity, if you will, and race relations, and et cetera. Now, I thought in some situations that's what the city's Civil Rights Department and Civil Rights Commission was about. For any that have any doubt of what this commentator is saying, go back and read the city charter, if you will, and go back and take a look at documentation starting in 1959 and take a look at the creation of the city Civil Rights Department and Civil Rights Commission, which are two entities. The Civil Rights Commission, by the way, used to have subpoena power. They were stripped of that by the Minneapolis City Council in 1973 after a titanic battle between the commission of that particular era and the Police Federation and the city itself and the office of the mayor, which was interesting back then, but prevailed before the state Supreme Court. But the following year, the Minneapolis City Council stripped the Minneapolis Civil Rights Commission, not the department, because the department could be handled because the director of the department then, as is now, is appointed by the executive branch. And so the commission was stripped. Now, all of this is relevant to what we're going to be getting into tonight with regards to how well the city will be able to govern itself. But anyways, back to 1973. In 1972 and 71 and 70 and 69 and et cetera, the Minneapolis Civil Rights Commission had a subpoena authority over the police. And in matters of discipline and et cetera, and it was an issue, particularly after a Law and Order mayor, the late Charles Stenvig, was elected as mayor of the city of Minneapolis in the late 1960s. It was decided that there were too many individuals on the Civil Rights Commission that could not be controlled, if you will, and that consequently a different action. At one point, the Police Federation actually told its members to violate the law and to defy the ordinance and to not respond to the subpoena authority of the Minneapolis Civil Rights Commission. Again, not the department, because the department did whatever the mayor at that particular time directed and ordered. It didn't work like that with the commission, in that a majority of the commissioners was appointed by members of the city council, if you will. So that happened and changed the course of many things in this city. And here we are now, 40 years later, if you will, and we are hearing this conversation, number one, about putting in place entities that will do supervision of the police and et cetera. Apparently, no one pays any attention to the contract and the agreement between the city of Minneapolis and the Police Federation, and what that means and what can be imposed. Notice the word we use, what can be imposed on the Police Federation and what cannot be imposed on the Federation. But back in the day, as folks like to say, there was community involvement and participation in the policing of the police. Now, I knew, as a person who was a member of the Civil Rights Commission back then, that was going to be something that was going to be hard to maintain. But I thought that once we won in the state Supreme Court, that the city and its legislative body and its then mayor would not be so bodacious as to strip the commission of its authority. What also happened at that time, the terms members of the commission who were determined to be quote-unquote anti-police, whatever that was supposed to mean, would not be reappointed, and ultimately it became extremely difficult to find any legal representation for another court test. The test involving the challenge to the Police Federation and its refusal to honor the subpoena authority of the Civil Rights Commission, Tanning Battle, but because of a attorney in a law firm, the Edelman Law Firm, if you will, and they providing their services, one of the largest law firms in the Twin Cities, pro bono, they were able to prevail. But the political circumstances in 1973-74 began to change, particularly with no advocacy, no longer on the Civil Rights Commission, if you will, and a new set of individuals. In fact, we call your attention to newspaper accounts in the late 70s, early 80s on William Davis, now incarcerated in a federal penitentiary, who had been appointed and was a quote-unquote spear carrier for the Democratic Party, had been put in charge as the chairman of the Minneapolis Civil Rights Commission, and so working in close concert with incoming mayors. Things changed in 1979 with the election of Al Hofstede, for those that know their history, to re-engage, if you will, reinvigorate the issue of police community relations and et cetera, but it still was not able to work itself out. By that time, the Federation had grown in significant strength politically and otherwise, and so it was a very, very difficult climb that did not basically happen. A couple of years later, a man by the name of Earl Craig, who at that time was president of the Urban Coalition of Minneapolis, was asked to chair a special commission to try to bring the city back to where it was in the 1960s with regards to civilian authority, if you will, civilian supervision, and et cetera. Earl Craig, now deceased, by the way, was not able to pull that off. This was a interesting city, if you will. It had become very hard-lined. It was not the fake liberal enclave that that people like to try to pretend that it was. So now we come to a new period, a period in which there are reformers. Some of them, just newly elected, don't like to identify as that, but that's what they are, reformers, who are going to, well, in fact, as we speak, and it has been like this ever since election night, November 2017, there is a volatility that is in play right now in City Hall, and as they prepare for the reorganization, the election of the council president by the 13-member council, if you will, and how the responsibility and authority of power will be used and who and what particular block, if you will be in charge. In fact, it will be interesting, particularly after the results of the presidency of the city council is determined. It will be interesting to see how the Police Federation will, in fact, respond to the leadership of the city council. Again, the mayor, who in this case would be Jacob Frye, is one of the few responsibilities under the charter that the office of the mayor has a responsibility for. But no one has responsibility for the Federation. They are an entity unto themselves, if you will, and have shown that they are tested. Now, as we said a decade ago, there was a man by the name of John DeMonaco, who was a man of reasonableness, if you will, honesty, and vision. It's a different set and a different team, quote unquote, that is involved and in play. And so we will not only watch carefully, but we will have to make it quite clear that we see a very, very, just again, we are sworn to a certain promised level of confidentiality, and we're going to maintain that. But when we have been made aware of what the politics are, what the maneuvers are, and et cetera, that we think that it will be extremely tough. As we said at the very beginning of this program, it will be extremely tough for the governance and the ability of the council to govern. We have not seen a council which is discombobulated, if you will, since before the days of Barb Johnson as council president, who served with effectiveness and et cetera. And so this is an interesting situation. It will be interesting to see. Caucuses are. We have the largest number of persons of color in the history of the council, if you will. We have a number of, well, what is it? We have the, we'll just kind of go by the wards there. We have the 4th Ward, the 5th Ward, the 8th Ward, and the 6th Ward, and the 9th Ward. So we have quite a few. We have a Latino. We have the rest are quote-unquote black persons, if you will, be they American-born or foreign-born, if you will. And so it'll be interesting to see what kind of coalitions that they make. The name of who seems to be the leading contender to become the next council president has been made known to this commentator. But again, we are sworn to a certain level of confidentiality. We will be able, by next week, we will be able to speak with greater specificity, if you will, with regards to what will be happening as the council moves towards that. We will assume that the Minneapolis Star Tribune will finally write some kind of piece in its paper about what is happening with regards to the structuring of the city council. Now, that takes us back to the police department, and it takes us back to two specific situations, particularly for those that say form, they are about changing policing, if you will, and et cetera. They will try to follow the lead of Melvin Carter III in St. Paul, comments attributed to him both last night and in this afternoon's edition or this morning's edition of the St. Paul Pioneer Press. Now, the reason we say that is that there is another problem that has emerged, and it's all within the family, if you will. In other words, it's all Democrats. So there's not going to be a way to blame the Republicans, if you will, or the Libertarians, if you will, or the Green Party, and et cetera. These are all good old Democrats, all good friends, and et cetera. In fact, they will be at the inauguration ball or whatever the incoming mayor, Jacob Frey, intends to have. But here's the situation. You have two very high-profile police officer-involved shootings, one in which there was a fatality, another one in which the individual seems to be recovering from his wounds, but there is a great mystery. Now, in the middle of this is the county attorney for our beloved county, and the longtime prosecutor, if you will, Michael Freeman. Now, Mr. Freeman has made a couple blunders here in the last 30 days, if you will. He allowed himself to be recorded by so-called activists at a Christmas party where everyone was, you know, turning the glasses up and nipping and doing their thing. Sometimes, you know, people shouldn't drink and talk. But in that particular situation, the county attorney was approached by activists, as they were identified, who raised questions about what was the delay as it pertains to the matter surrounding the charging of Mohammed Nord, a Minneapolis police officer, a Somali, if you will, a Muslim, if you will. And why had he not been charged, if you will? Some, if they had their way, particularly in the early days of the shooting in the summer of 2017, people were talking in terms of, you know, hanging him by a tree and sending he and all of his people back to, you know, Somalia or wherever else. I don't know if I'd want to go back to Somalia right now, not with all of the American bombing. Uh-oh, we don't talk about that. That has been going on in Somalia. In fact, there was a attack yesterday by American aircraft, if you will. In fact, the American government is killing a lot of black Africans all across black Africa, from the Indian Ocean to the Atlantic Ocean, if you will. But we don't have a discussion because we've got to spend our time, or they have to spend their time analyzing the tweets by Donald Trump when he gets up at 5 and 4:30 in the morning. But the American military presence is taking a lot of lives of Somalians in Somalia, if you will. And there's a certain silence, just as there is with regards to the David Johnson. Oh, there's probably many of you have already forgotten the David Johnson, the 26-year-old African-American Green Beret, decorated and etc., left to die by his comrades in mysterious circumstances, if you will. You know, the Pentagon was supposed to come back with a full detailed report. They issued a report just before Christmas. The whole narrative has changed, but the French, the Niger government, and the Mali government have indicated that the United States is not telling the truth, and they're particularly not telling the truth about those white military contractors that have been hired to provide protection for the $50 million drone base being built in the northern part of the country, about 400 miles from where that quote-unquote ambush that caused Sergeant David Johnson his life and caused the president and the president's chief of staff, General Kelly, and others to blast and disrespect the wife and the mother and Congresswoman Wilson, who continues to carry on the inquiry of what really happened to a young man in a situation in which no one really knows if that's his body in the casket that was interned at a military cemetery. And so that, again, takes us back to what is happening here in our city, if you will. Now, the mayor has indicated what will be on the surface his three priorities, if you will. We go back over them again: housing, if you will, police community relations, and additional economic opportunity. Of course, this is the same city that stayed silent as basically no African Americans, with the exception of Dr. Louis King, who is making in his concession operation there at the People's Stadium. In fact, congratulations, Dr. King. You, with the Super Bowl coming in, you're going to have a hell of a number of paydays and also with the, what you call it, games. And so that's why I'm puzzled about the creation of the office, if you will, of equity and race. I mean, what does that mean with regards to the Civil Rights Department? What is its purpose? What does it do, if anything, if you will? Now, this comes at a time when the numbers of Native Americans, I'm putting them in this order because I know that so many of the activists are cowards and will not speak or address this. But we talked about it on last week's program and kind of smiled as we were talking about it, because NPR, or NPR in Minnesota, NPR on the national public radio, broke a heck of a story about the misappropriation of $500,000, number one, the role of a number of individuals, including a woman who will go on trial the day after the Super Bowl ends, a woman by the name of Destiny, if you will, who lives in Hudson, Wisconsin, will go on trial for vehicular homicide. But what has happened is that we are finding, and we've been talking about it for almost a year. Actually, we began talking about it long before that. We refer you to a column specifically, 22nd of July, 2014, our column in the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder, talking in terms of the problems that had emerged with the opportunity of African Americans, Native Americans, and others of color to get in and to be employed by the Minneapolis Police Department. There were some of you out there that immediately ran and told Massa that yours truly does not speak for the community. I don't speak for the community. I speak to the issues, to the information, and to the facts and the evidence. Now, that's the way the game really works. Since we began to talk about this and put pressure on, there has been an even more severe reduction. Again, NPR, for those of you that pretend that you haven't seen it, because my IT people have been plastering on all kinds of websites, going in the back door on some of y'all, and making sure the information is out there. But it is the $500,000, and it is the history of the individual that really was the hero of this, a young man named Hassan Salam, a 30-year employee. God, we keep saying that and laying that out, and people just get quiet and look down at the ground and et cetera. 30-year employee who was forced out in the summer of 2017 because he exposed the corruption and the theft and mismanagement of $500,000. You know, we are an interesting city for our international and domestic audience. We actually paid a white psychiatrist, a black head of the Human Resources Department, and an Asian woman who should not be involved with anything having to do with the examination of sensitive information. They were involved in taking down $500,000 working with the white psychiatrist in stopping, and we repeat this again, in stopping the hiring of African Americans and Native Americans, because as we have said for the last number of months, and as we said in the radio broadcast and the hard copy, that what has been done to the Native Americans is outrageous. It's criminal what has happened. What is being done and what has happened to the African Americans that have been denied opportunity, their franchise, their constitutional rights have been violated, and et cetera. And yet the previous administration took the position that as long as the money to continue to support and fund racism and nullification did the job it was supposed to do, everything was okay. And so you have a situation now where basically you have exactly the same number of African-American police officers that you had when the federal government in 2008 was convinced that Minneapolis was doing the right thing. As we have said on previous programs, and again, no one has really challenged us on it. We know why. We were involved, and when I say we, I'm talking about the members of the Department of Justice's Office of Justice Programs. We were totally lied to by the Hodges administration, by the head of Human Resources, by Destiny and others with regards to corrective actions had been taken, had taken place. It was one of the reasons that in 2013, Chief Janae Harter, who, by the way, one of the prime reasons that she was forced out as chief was that she was beginning to raise questions about the psychological testing, the numbers of persons of color that were being forced out, the falsification of documentation, and et cetera, which caused Hassan Salaam a 30-year career with the city of Minneapolis, a brilliant Nigerian, if you will, a man that had been in this country, had given his heart and soul, if you will, a man with two doctoral degrees, two master's degrees, and et cetera. He probably actually should have been heading up the Human Resources Department. Now, I say all of that because you have to remember that the current mayor sworn in yesterday of the city of Minneapolis was on the city council. In fact, he was in the room in the fall of last year when this commentator, speaking in support of Arredondo to ascend to that position, pointed out the fact that there were irregularities, there were things happening to the extent that there needed to be an immediate examination, audit, and probe of what was going on in the Human Resources Department. Unfortunately, the council was not prepared to do that, though they knew that what was going on was undermining and would continue to undermine as we go through the rest of 2018. The opportunity of the current chief of the department, Medea Arredondo, to bring about the kind of success that he is so committed to, if you will, and we repeat that again, he is committed, but there are many that are not. The current mayor of this city, sworn in yesterday, never said a mumbling word, never raised an issue about the numbers and et cetera. Let me go back. Oh, we have enough time tonight. We still have 13 minutes. One of the things that people did not know until working closely with then Assistant Chief Chris Arneson and Chief Janae Harto, I began to be the platform to raise the question about what was happening and why we were not seeing the numbers, and then we asked for the numbers. We found out in 2014 that the Human Resources Department, under the leadership of Ms. Ferguson, Destiny, and others, had found a way, working through the office of the then mayor of the city of Minneapolis, Betsy Hodges, had found a way to stop giving the numbers to the department that they were overseeing, and that was the Minneapolis Police Department. Now, in the last month and a half, Chief Medea Arredondo called the human resources hierarchy in and indicated that that would change and that they were to, his department was to receive the numbers and et cetera. They still have not received the numbers. And in fact, in an outrageous retaliatory action against the person that was perceived as raising too many questions, Commander Charles Adams of the Minneapolis Police Department, his daughter, who should have been sworn in as a Minneapolis police officer a couple of weeks ago, documents that pertain to the eligibility of her to continue to move through the final process. And this began in the summer of 2017. Commander Adams' daughter was forced out of the CSO program, Community Service Officers program, under a circumstance in which documents were forged, if you will. Now, everyone knows about this, if you will. It's nothing new, if you will. There has been a decision clearly made that is to be kept quiet. It'll be interesting to see if Mayor Fry decides to give Chief Arredondo the latitude to force the Human Resources Department to hand all authority and et cetera back to the police department, and that there is reconsideration with regards to the daughter of Commander Charles Adams in what was an outrageous retaliation against him and against his daughter. As I said before, his daughter should have been sworn in as a Minneapolis police officer a couple of weeks ago. Because documents were forged by the Human Resources Department, which made it appear that she had not adhered to all of the requirements of becoming a sworn peace officer, if you will, she was forced out of the program and told that she could reenter the program in January of this year, later on this month. Of course, she is a very strong-willed young African-American woman, and she basically told them that she would be moving on, and that she has done. But the situation has not been properly dealt with. The violation of law has not been dealt with, if you will, and it is business as usual. And what is happening and what will really become a problem by July in August of this year, 2018, is that there will be a total revelation that there are no significant numbers of new African-American candidates coming into the Minneapolis Police Department. Now, who do you think they're going to put the blame on? Yes, yeah, they're going to put the blame on the current chief of the department, and people will try to, quote-unquote, make documentation and information. As we said before, everything that we're saying over the last number of minutes is all documented, if you will. There are emails and et cetera between all parties. As we said before, Chief Arredondo took a stand. He was not backed by outgoing Mayor Hodges. I have no idea what incoming Mayor Fry intends to do. This becomes all crucial because at some point the city council will, under the guise of supporting, quote-unquote, the creation of the Office of Diversity, quote-unquote, and Race and et cetera, will try to make it appear that they are going to provide a greater presence of people of color in all positions in city government. Well, only time will tell. The history of this city has been extremely poor and has only been activated. In other words, an action to correct the problem has only been activated by legal action. We call your attention to cases such as Carter v. Gallagher, if you will, Edwards and others versing Tony Boza as chief of the Minneapolis Police Department, or the case in 1972 of Edelman, Edwards, and Smith against the Minneapolis Police Federation and the city of Minneapolis, the city council, and the office of the mayor. It takes strong litigation. I do not think at this point in time and at this hour and this our year beginning 2018 program that this city council is going to have the wherewithal, the tenaciousness, the intestinal fortitude to do what has to be done. There will be a lot of discussion in the coming early months of 2018 because there are some significant elections, of course, and you have the by-elections and et cetera, midterm elections in the federal portfolios and et cetera. There will be a lot of discussion about how things are working, and it'll start with the housing, if you will, and then there will be committees that will begin to meet, and they will talk in terms of how they will bring the police under control and et cetera. Now, as we said before, you have a police department that there is far too many things happening with regards to what is being said internally by some white officers, if you will. And so in the final minutes, this brings us to the question for Mike Freeman. What is it, Mike, that is absent from what you need as the chief prosecutor to make a determination with respect to Mohammed Nord. Now, on that tape that Mike Freeman was reported on while drinking and celebrating and having fun at the Union Hall, he made a couple of interesting statements. First of all, he blasted the BCA, that normally been buddies at all times. I've seen that in all cases that the BCA is involved in. Also, earlier, the county attorney had gone directly to the governor, Mark Dayton, to ask for his help because Mike Freeman felt that the BCA was dragging its feet and he was under pressure after making promises to Justine Dahman's parents in Australia, to her fiancé here, to the neighbors in the neighborhood out there in southwest Minneapolis, and et cetera, and et cetera, that he would bring them the head of Mohammed Nord. So this raises the question as we move into the last 3 minutes of tonight's program. What is it that the county attorney did not have? You had an incident. There were four witnesses. One, unfortunately, was made deceased, if you will. The other three were two whites and one black, if you will. Neither one of the two white witnesses, one a young man riding on his bike down the alley as the shot was fired, the other one a six-month veteran of the police department who people desperately tried to get him to slander and to badmouth Officer Nord. He refused to do that. So did the gentleman on the bike, if you will. And so the question tonight in this corner, and we will now continue to ask it in that the county attorney continues to push the timeline back, what is it that you lack at this particular hour, Mr. Prosecutor? Information do you need to have? Or are you waiting for some quote-unquote silver bullet witness, if you will, who will come out of nowhere and who will make a statement that just 2 days before the shooting, an Officer Nord had told him that he was a ISIS supporter and he was going to kill white Christians? Is that the narrative that people are trying to play? Is that where the fallout took place between the county attorney's office and the BCA, if you will? And as we said before, caused the county prosecutor to go directly to the governor of the state of Minnesota and ask for his help. And, of course, the governor ordered the commissioner of the Department of Public Safety, in which the BCA operates under, to provide the necessary information. And in early September, the county attorney received that information. But one of the other things that disturbed me, as a longtime observer, if you will, as a historian, and et cetera, was the slip that the county attorney made when he maintained that the second officer given them nothing but a bunch of manure, if you will, and slandered him as he was slamming the BCA. Next week, we're going to talk a little bit about what we feel that the county attorney and the BCA thought they were going to be able to manipulate and maneuver that second police officer. One of the things that Officer Nord has done was the best thing that he ever could have done in listening to his attorney, and that is to have never given a statement. If he would have given a statement, they would have tore him to shreds. Next week, we'll talk about a little bit more specific details. Again, Happy New Year. I'm Ron Edwards. This is the Don and Ron program coming to you from the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. Stay strong, Minnesota. You'll need to be. Good night.